Radio Prague News.
President Václav Klaus has made a strong attack on Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek, accusing him of one-man rule. Compensation for damages suffered during the Soviet-led invasion of 1968 has been paid out to a small minority of applicants. And the Czech football team have beaten Costa Rica in their second-last World Cup warm-up. President Václav Klaus has made a strong attack on Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek, accusing him of one-man rule. Speaking in Wednesday's Mladá fronta dnes, the president said the extent of Mr. Paroubek's power over both the government and his Social Democratic Party was unprecedented in the post-revolution era. For his part, Mr. Paroubek said the president had broken his pledge to remain above party politics. The right-wing Civic Democrats, founded by Mr. Klaus, are narrowly ahead of the Social Democrats in most polls, taken ahead of elections next weekend. Compensation for damages suffered during the Soviet-led invasion of 1968 has been paid out to a small minority of applicants, Mladá fronta dnes reported. A new law last year earmarked over $10 million to compensate those who lost a family member or suffered serious injury or rape during the occupation. However, of almost 400 claimants, just over 50 have been granted compensation by the Interior Ministry. Many of those turned down say it was because they had received a one-off payment in 1990. The import of cheap eggs from Poland and Lithuania is having a disastrous impact on the egg business in the Czech Republic, the Czech Poultry Farmers Union said on Wednesday. Egg production in this country fell by one-fifth in 2005. Industry figures say if the current situation continues, one-half of Czech producers could go out of business next year. The Czech Republic's football team beat Costa Rica 1-0 in a friendly in Jablonec on Tuesday evening. The only goal of the game was scored by Vratislav Lokvenc in the 82nd minute. Lokvenc had replaced Jan Koller, who started his first international since returning from injury. The Czechs' final warm-up game before the World Cup is against Trinidad and Tobago in Prague on Saturday. The weather, temperatures should gradually rise over the next couple of days, reaching around 18 degrees Celsius at the weekend. It will be quite bright with rain in places. My name is Ian Willoughby. That's the end of the news.
You're tuned to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Brian Sabin. Coming up in today's program, President Klaus speaks out in advance of the weekend's parliamentary elections, Czech automaker Škoda announces plans to set up an assembly plant in Russia, and a new exhibition examines the Roma Holocaust. That, and a special look at what matters most to first-time voters in the Czech Republic. These are all coming your way. Czech President Václav Klaus has given an extensive interview to the daily Mladá fronta dnes, in which he hints at what steps he might take towards the creation of a new government. In the article, he also launches his strongest ever attack on the current Prime Minister, Jiří Paroubek. Rob Cameron joins me in the studio now. Rob, can you give me a quick run-through on the President's political CV?
Certainly. Václav Klaus was elected president in 2003. Before that, he served two terms as Prime Minister of the Czech Republic in governments dominated by his right-of-centre Civic Democrats. That's the party he co-founded in 1991. He led that party for 11 years, stepped down after a poor election showing in 2002. When he became president in the following year, he promised to be a non-partisan president, but he does remain honorary chairman of the Civic Democrats.
Yes, but president is a largely ceremonial post here in the Czech Republic. Just how much power does he have to influence developments here?
Well, Brian, it is a ceremonial post, but he does actually have a great deal of power. Traditionally, the president plays an important role in the aftermath of elections, i.e. From Sunday onwards. It is he who invites the leader of political parties to try and form a government. The Czech constitution actually gives him a lot of leeway. Nothing There is nothing in the constitution which says he has to ask the leader of the winning party. So in theory, Mr. Klaus could ask the leader of any party to form a government.
So President Klaus gives this extensive interview to Mara Fontanes. Did he give any indication that he will exercise that right?
Well, no. He said that he was almost certain the election would be won by either the Social Democrats, who are in power now, or his party, the Civic Democrats, and there was no reason not to invite the leader of whichever of those two parties wins to start the talks on forming a government.
Yeah, what about that new government? Did he give any hints as to what he'd like to see from these elections?
Well, as I said earlier, he's supposed to be a non-partisan president, so he has to be very careful about what he says. But he did give some very heavy hints. For one thing, he launched a fierce attack against the current Prime Minister, Jiří Paroubek. He expressed concern over what he called the unprecedented power wielded by Mr. Paroubek. He said the Prime Minister had taken individual personal control over the government as well as over his political party, and said that this was a warning sign to voters.
Right. So hardly an endorsement of the Social Democrats. Did the president say anything else interesting?
Lots, but too much to go into here, unfortunately, Brian. But interestingly, he spoke of his unwillingness to oversee the formation of a minority cabinet after the elections, and said that he would push for the creation of a majority government. Now, veteran Klaus watchers would say that's Klaus speak for "I'm not going to let Jiří Paroubek form a minority government propped up by the communists," which is one option on the table, shall we say. Now, if Mr. Klaus's party, the Civic Democrats, win the elections, there's a fair chance there will be a majority centre-right coalition. But if Mr. Paroubek and the Social Democrats win the elections, it is quite unlikely that they will be able to form a majority government. So we could well be in for another long, hot summer of complicated wrangling and political horse trading. So watch this space.
Thanks a lot, Rob. Rob Cameron with that report. The Volkswagen Group and Škoda Auto are planning to conquer the Russian market. On Monday, a contract was signed to build an assembly plant in the city of Kaluga, some 100 kilometers southwest of Moscow. So just how will this affect the Czech Republic? Škoda Auto is the Czech Republic's largest car manufacturer and has been in the Volkswagen Group since 1991. Some 27,000 Czechs are currently employed by the car giant's manufacturing plant in the town of Mladá Boleslav, just north of Prague. Dita Asiadu reports.
Russia has become a very attractive market for the world's leading car makers. Last year alone, the sale of new foreign cars grew by 60%. Car giants such as Ford and Renault have already built plants there, and General Motors announced this week that it will do the same. It is only natural, then, that Škoda Auto and the Volkswagen Group are joining the club. Though not confirmed by the car makers themselves, they're reportedly investing over 400 million euros in their new plant. Roman Meliška is from Škoda Auto's corporate communications department.
The new plant is very important because the Russian market is growing fast. And to be competitive on the market, to be able to offer competitive prices and attractive packages for customers, you really need to produce locally, because there are duties on imported cars that increase the price on 25%, and I mean, this is really a huge difference.
In simple terms, Škoda Auto's cars would be built in Mladá Boleslav, taken off the production line, disassembled, exported to Russia in pieces, and reassembled at the new plant. With this, the carmaker avoids the 25% customs tax and only pays a 3% duty on the assembly components, thereby cutting the local sales price of Škoda cars in Russia by 15%. Lal Frink is a writer for Automotive News Europe.
Škoda has a new kit logistics center in Mladá Boleslav, and this means that they will be able to prepare for shipping up to 50,000 cars a year. And the factory that Volkswagen plans to start there will begin by assembling Škoda Octavia cars from kits, and then will move into more complete car production in a few years.
In the future, other Škodas, such as the Fabia and Superb, will also be assembled. Volkswagen will use the plant for its Polos, Passats, Touaregs, and an unnamed model specifically manufactured for the Russian market. The new plant is to start operation in the middle of next year. Simultaneously, the Volkswagen Group and Škoda Auto are going to build a complete manufacturing plant, including welding, painting and assembly shops, the operation of which is planned to start in the first half of 2009. Plans are to increase the number of Škoda models sold in Russia from the current 10,000 a year to 30,000. But although the assembly of models for the Russian market that was previously carried out in Mladá Boleslav will now be done locally, the Czech Republic will not suffer, says Škoda Auto's Roman Meliška.
Due to the fact that Škoda Auto and Volkswagen will be able to increase the sales volume in Russia, because the prices will be then more competitive with the local production, that means all the components, they will be produced in a higher volume. That means that the working places in Czech Republic within Škoda Auto factories are could be seen even as more secured with the new volumes and with the new factory in Russia and in other countries.
The Volkswagen Group and Škoda Auto already have assembly and manufacturing plants in Ukraine, Kazakhstan, Bosnia and China. Another is currently being built in India. With the help of these plants, the Mladá Boleslav factory hopes to double production in the next decade to reach 1 million cars a year.
And that was Dita Asiadu on the Škoda Auto Group. An exhibit devoted to the history of the Roma and Sinti Holocaust has opened at Prague's National Gallery. Entitled The Roma Holocaust, The Genocide of Roma and Sinti and Racism in Today's Europe, the exhibit is meant to bring to light aspects of World War II history not often mentioned. Linda Mashtelisht brings us more.
It is only during the past decade or so that historians of World War II and the Holocaust have begun to write seriously about the fate of Europe's Roma during that horrible period. Hitler's racial ideology targeted European Roma for liquidation, and 500,000 Roma and Sinti were dead by the war's end in 1945. Now, an exhibit devoted to the history of the Roma Holocaust has been prepared by the Documentation Center of German Sinti and Roma, based in Heidelberg, Germany, and its display in Prague was organized by the Committee for the Compensation of the Romani Holocaust. At the exhibit opening, Jana Verbová, whose grandparents were interned and whose father was born in the Leti camp in the south of the Czech Republic, spoke about her hopes for the exhibit's success.
A já doufám, jako vnučka lidí, kteří prošli táborem v Letech, že ji navštíví hodně lidí.
As the granddaughter of people who lived through the Leti camp, I hope that many people will visit this exhibition and that they'll no longer say that Roma died in the camps because they were dirty and didn't uphold adequate hygiene standards. I hope that these photographs will prove that Roma in Leti lived in horrible conditions and that people will no longer make light of the topic. Above all, I hope that what happened in Leti will never be forgotten and that everyone will know about this piece of history, not just those few among us who recall the events regularly, but everyone. I think that I can also speak for my grandfather, and I hope that he's not angry with me in heaven when I say that the events of Leti and the other camps should never be repeated.
Leti a ostatní tábory už by se nikdy neměly opakovat.
The head of the Committee for the Compensation of the Romani Holocaust in the Czech Republic, Čenek Ružička, has this to say about the exhibit's aims.
No, samozřejmě, že nic zásadního jako určitě se nezmění.
Of course, nothing fundamental will change, but the exhibit should serve at least to start a change where the perception of Roma is concerned. When you look at these photographs, you see that these Roma were intelligent people. But today you hear the fascist groups saying that they were dirty, that they stole, and so on. Yet here you see that they were intelligent people who had values, were educated in traditional trades, and made a regular living. This exhibit shows all of this clearly.
Over 80 large display panels with many black and white photographs illustrate the fate of Roma and Sinti in various European states. Both those states that were occupied, like the Czech Republic, and those that collaborated with Nazi Germany. One of the most engaging aspects of the exhibit is the fact that individual people and families are profiled, so visitors have a sense of who these Roma and Sinti were, what they looked like, and the histories of their families. Part of the exhibit's aim is also to draw attention to racism against Roma today. And Gwendolyn Albert, the director of the League of Human Rights, comments on the degree of awareness about the Roma Holocaust in the Czech Republic and the attention the subject is given.
Even in Holocaust scholarship, the Roma have been completely neglected, you know, until really the last decade, actually, when people have slowly begun to realize that there was a gap in what they were recording and transmitting and saying about what had happened to these people. And I think the entire history of the Czech government's response to Leti is, it's just incredible, you know? I mean, it's been more than 10 years now that the relatives of the survivors and the survivors themselves have been asking in the most civilized way possible for this 15,000 pig industrial farm to be removed from the place where their people died against their will.
While the issue of the Leti pig farm remains unresolved, the Roma exhibit is on display at the National Gallery until July 16th.
Thank you, Linda. St. Michael's Church in the heart of Prague's old town is currently being used for secular, and some say blasphemous, purposes. On Tuesday, a group of students staged a march to protest the church's sale by the National Library to private interests. They say that the church, no matter how it's being used, needs to be preserved. Radio Prague's Michael Longaro was at the march.
It was an extremely bitter and wet day when the protest march kicked off at Mihaska Street near Old Town Square. From there, it snaked its way through narrow streets and over the Charles Bridge to the entrance of Parliament. The Student Initiative Council, composed of students from Charles University and other institutions, read their manifesto denouncing the sale of St. Michael's to a supposedly controversial buyer. I asked council member Miriam Natuf who this buyer is and why he is controversial.
The man, his name is Novikovsky, he doesn't want to speak with anybody. He communicates just per his lawyer. And also, he doesn't communicate with journalists. You can train on the internet the pages and which journalists were trying to communicate with him. And he made their striptease and also techno parties. So in this institution, like church, it's not possible to do anything like this because it's a historical institution.
In recent years, the church, dating back to the 14th century, has filled a number of non-religious functions as a pub, a crystal shop, and a cafe. In fact, it has not hosted a Catholic Mass since 1786, when there were sweeping church reforms throughout the Austrian Empire, and for most of the 20th century served as a store. It came into the possession of the National Library in 1984, but the library soon discovered it was unsuitable for storing books. Last year, the church was sold for 46 million Czech crowns, around $2 million, and the money was used to restore the Clementium, another historic part of the library. Opponents to the sale argued that even though St. Michael's has not served as a church for over 200 years, it must be treated with respect. Although the National Library's representatives were unable to comment, according to their press releases, the church was sold to a private business because neither they nor any other state institution had any use for it, although they had tried to find an alternative user. A lack of money to restore the seriously decayed building made the task of finding a new use more urgent, and the library argues that only a private investor would have the financial wherewithal to restore and utilize the space. Since the church has already been put to use as a striptease club, it appears that the students' protest might have arrived too late.
Over the next few days, before and after the elections that get underway this weekend, we will be speaking to a number of politicians and pundits. But for a somewhat different perspective, in today's program, Ian Willoughby speaks to a group of 18-year-old school students who will this weekend have the opportunity to vote for the first time in their lives.
I'm at a secondary school in Vysočany in Prague 9. I'm here to meet some of the school's fifth-year students, some of whom, or all of whom, I believe, will be voting for the first time this weekend in the elections. With me are Christina, Ilya, Teresa, and Veronica. Veronica, if I could start with you, what for you are the main issues in the elections, and what are the issues that may decide which party you vote for?
Well, for me, the important issues are social issues. Definitely, that is the main sort of area by which I choose which party I want to vote.
What particular social issues?
Well, definitely issues of tax and the whole welfare system, because I feel that that's something that's really important to a lot of people I know.
Christina?
Well, at the moment, I'm quite a lot interested in environmental issues, which I think most of the parties in our political spectrum don't put too much importance to. So I would decide according to what improvements in this area the parties offer.
Okay, and you, Ilya?
Well, for me, the most three important issues are stable economic growth, frequently good cooperation with EU, and reforms of the educational system. At this phase, I would like to say that I'm quite disappointed that parties are only discussing matters in terms of finance, but they don't talk about reforming the system in terms of educating the pupils, meaning that pupils will no longer be taught to absorb large amounts of facts, but they will be actually taught how to apply these. And this is a problem in the Czech Republic that must be solved, and that is as well necessary for keeping that stable economic growth.
In general, are you interested in politics? Do you follow events in the newspapers? Do you watch the news on TV? Do you discuss politics with your friends, Teresa?
Yeah, we always argue in class about politics, and I personally watch the news and read magazines, and I'm interested in politics.
Yes, I would definitely say that I do watch the news and read the newspapers, and especially with the upcoming elections, political discussion in groups of friends has been very frequent, I would say.
And animated?
Definitely.
Do you respect politicians? Do you respect the Czech Republic's political class, so to speak, or your leaders, Christina?
Well, I do respect all the politicians for actually going into politics and presenting themselves to the public in the way they do, even though I mostly do not agree with many of them.
Ilya, what do you think? Do you respect your political leaders?
Although I don't always agree with all their proposals, ideas, and perhaps with the intervention of some lobby groups into politics, I respect their work, and I think that they are a necessary part of the society.
What about their method of debate and the language they use? When you see, I don't know, the head of one of the biggest parties calling the head of the other biggest party a liar on television. Teresa?
Well, maybe they should sometimes think about the words they use, because it's what they do is not always appropriate for the television. As an example, the slap at that conference.
That was when Mr. Macek slapped David Rath, the health minister, on the back of the head recently. Another question is campaigning and the use of celebrities in campaigning by political parties. One of the best examples, I suppose, now is you can see Milan Baroš, the football player, on billboards for one of the main right-wing parties. What do you think of that? Is it something which might influence voters or influence yourselves, perhaps?
Yeah, in some cases, I would say it may influence a lot of voters, but actually, I personally see it as an exaggeration of the election campaigns, and I'm not in favor of celebrities taking part in the election campaigns of particular parties, because it seems as there is always just money behind that.
Veronica?
Well, I think that the political parties who have popular personalities on billboards and in other media, well, I would say it's quite sad, because these parties aren't presenting their program, they aren't presenting their ideas, they're simply placing some celebrity there instead to substitute these ideas, which I don't think is really the right thing to do in the campaign.
What about the smaller parties? Would you vote for a party which, realistically speaking, doesn't have a chance of reaching the minimum 5% threshold? Would you vote for a party that simply won't get into parliament? Ilya?
No, I wouldn't. To me, it seems like at this phase quite an ineffective use of the vote. I would rather prefer a party which is experienced, of which we know something, and that can propose something sensible to us and reasonable as well.
Anybody disagree with that?
I would disagree with that, because I think that really we should always vote for what we believe rather than vote tactically against someone because we don't like them, so we don't want them to win. And so if none of the major parties really suit us, then I think that it makes sense to vote for a small party that doesn't get into parliament but show that we support these ideas anyway.
Well, I think at this time it's much better to vote against what you're against than what you're for, because I don't actually agree with all the big parties, but I'll rather vote a big party that has a chance to get into the parliament to prevent another party, which I really don't like, to get into parliament. For me, voting a small party that doesn't get in, it's like for throwing my vote away.
I won't ask you who you're going to vote for, but are you going to vote? And are you looking forward to it? You're all 18.
Yeah, I am going to vote for sure. And I am quite a lot looking forward to it.
Definitely, I am going to vote, and I am looking forward to it. And I think that it's definitely one of the rights in a democracy that I really want to use, and it's the right thing to do so.
Definitely, I will vote. I've already selected my party, and I take my election ballots everywhere with me where I go. So I'm excited.
I will vote as well, because for me it's a new experience and I want to have a say in what happens here.
And that report on Prague's first-time voters by Ian Willoughby. Thank you for listening to Radio Prague. Remember that all of our stories are available online at www.radio.cz. Feel free to send us an email at english@radio.cz. For all of us here, I'm Brian Sabin, saying so long until the next time. We'll be right back.